The OCD and Anxiety Podcast by Robert James Coaching. Hello and welcome to the OCD and Anxiety Podcast, where we explore how to have a more positive relationship with anxiety disorders, taking back control so that you can start living the life you choose and not the one chosen by your fears. Hello and welcome to episode 391. I hope that you're doing fantastically well no matter where you are today. And if you are struggling with OCD or anxiety this springtime and you would like to get some support with that, well, you can get a free session with me to get that. You can head over to my website, robertjamescoaching.com. There you can book in for that free session, or if you prefer, you can send me a message and let me know about what you're struggling with. In today's podcast, I speak with the hypnotherapist, Jenny Bell. Specializing in addiction recovery and reshaping relationships with food, Jenny's approach is deeply personal and rooted in her own journey of transformation, drawing inspiration from thought leaders like Gabor Mate and Joe Dispenza. She infuses her practice with compassion and empathy, offering a holistic perspective that transcends traditional therapy. A really kind of interesting conversation. We cover a lot of different ground. Obviously, we're looking at hypnotherapy and how that might be helpful for things like anxiety and even potentially for OCD. We look at Jenny's own story where she talks about trauma and PTSD. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation. She's a very inspirational person. She's obviously been through a lot of her own challenges, and that really comes across during the conversation. So I really hope that you find it helpful. If you have any questions at all, do please let me know. And if you'd like to find out more about Jenny, you can do so by heading over to jennybell.co.uk. Also, there's the Facebook and Instagram links in the show notes, so you can head over there as well. So many thanks, guys. Yeah, and if you have any questions at all, do please let me know. And off we go. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Robert. Nice to be here.
That's really nice to have you on. And I've been wanting for a while to have a hypnotherapist onto the podcast. And, you know, you're also somebody who has struggled with anxiety. So it would be really nice just to hear a bit of background about you, please.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up struggling with anxiety and I had OCD. I even remember the day that it started. So I struggled with it for about 40 years. I did everything. I tried CBT, mindfulness, all of the usual things. I even spent 6 weeks in a clinic and 12 weeks as an outpatient, and I still come out struggling. And it really is something consuming. And I always felt like I never felt understood. You know, I don't think unless you've had anxiety or OCD, you really understand how consuming it can be. Mm. And oftentimes, you know, you go to the doctor and you say, I'm struggling with this, and they'll talk about tablets or more counselling. I always felt like I was being told that this is how we manage it. But my problem was I didn't want to manage it because obviously I wasn't managing it. So I wanted to look into a way and find out exactly what was going on in my mind.
Hmm.
So I looked into behavior and I looked into what the mind was actually doing. And when I sort of broke it down, it's almost more of a natural state based on our beliefs and our belief system that we can get into, that we use then OCD to kind of cope with the fear that we're trying to resolve in the mind. So that led me to looking into hypnotherapy, NLP, and all of those sorts of things that would deal with the subconscious part of the mind. So like the autopilot, where I feel this comes from.
Okay. And so what do you think caused your struggles with anxiety and OCD? You mentioned you think these things stem from childhood.
I mean, for myself and every client, there has always been some sort of childhood trauma, usually under the age of 10, whether we recognise it as trauma or not. You know, a child being dropped off at play school, it can be quite traumatic for a child.
Yeah.
Or whether you grew up, you know, particularly I grew up, my father was an alcoholic and it was very unpredictable and it was very frightening. You know, anxiety, we've always believed, is some sort of mental health illness, which is even more scary when you hear it said like that, when really the mind just does not feel safe because it cannot resolve the problem that it had as a child. So it like looks forward to protect us for anything that it perceives could be familiar in the future. So I look into more the side of things as, where did this start, rather than what we're actually doing and behaving now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good way to put it. No. Okay. And so, yeah, it's interesting what you're talking about there. And I really agree, you know, that so often I think there can be a misconception about what trauma actually is. And people tend to focus on, you know, very serious traumas, which of course are awful. And when people experience those, it's very difficult, very traumatic, but they can also be those smaller things. And I think that's really important to point that out, like being dropped off at the kindergarten and left, you know, and it can be very hard. And, you know, things like a hospital stay when you're separated from your parents, for example, can also be traumatic. And so I think there's all sorts of things like that that maybe we don't really think of as trauma, but they really are.
And it's always linked to some sort of childhood trauma. And it's so many of my clients, you know, if someone comes in with social anxiety, usually one of their scenes that we'll go back to when we regress back is a child being dropped off at nursery. And, you know, that child's been carried by its mother 24/7. It doesn't know what nursery is. It doesn't know what's going to happen. And a child's brain works in real time. So what a child is doing in this moment, it believes its life will always be that way. So that's when we are actually developing that subconscious mind. So when we take a child and we drop her off and, you know, the teachers are saying, just let her cry, she'll be fine. The child actually feels like, I'm going to be abandoned. No one is going to come back for me. I'm in this room of people. It's absolute terror. So, you know, to move that forward, if you look at how somebody's mind would work moving forward with that, you know, if they were to go into a similar situation in the future, the mind is going to automatically look back for the problem and then create the escape, which is actually the anxious response. So, you know, the body flooded with adrenaline and basically saying fight or flight. Mm. So if you look at it that way, it's not so much of a mental illness. It's a reaction to a perception of fear that we believe we haven't resolved at a deep level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So that's really interesting perspective that you have. And yeah, I think I really relate to that myself in many ways personally. Okay, so obviously you went on, you trained to be a hypnotherapist, and also you focused on something called rapid transformational therapy. How do these kind of approaches differ from traditional therapy approaches? And what do you think makes them effective in addressing emotional problems?
I think a big part of my journey and why I studied what I studied was because I had chronic anxiety myself. And, you know, as someone with anxiety, we overthink everything. We want to know every single detail. So I first of all started with hypnotherapy and NLP and found real benefits in that. And I met Marissa, who introduced me to rapid transformational therapy, which I also work with. And I'm a trainer for Marissa in that now. So it's a wonderful modality to use because it contains so many parts of how we can change our perception while in a subconscious mind. So, you know, there are so many different things that we can use. RTT being one of them, NLP being one of them. And I tend to combine many of the approaches to suit the client. So every client is different. So some clients may you know, need something like NLP because they're too worried about having hypnosis. Mm. You know, anxiety affects you to the extreme sometimes, doesn't it? But RTT obviously is a great modality because you're able to take the client back and see exactly to the point, to the moment where this issue started. Mm. So, you know, we can go and we can look at it at the root cause and resolve it at that point, because the mind is basically spinning a thought that this is something that is not, we're not able to resolve. It's got a problem and it does not feel safe. Anxiety is, I don't feel safe. That's the bottom line. So yeah. If we can make the mind feel safe and use hypnotherapy to almost rewire and reprogram moving forward how they want life to be, you know, when you're in a subconscious mind, it really will change the way you think and feel, because I found that all therapy was conscious based. Mm. And I'm sure everyone out there listening who has anxiety has overthought and overthought why they're doing what they're doing, but can't figure that out. You know, we're intelligent people. And if we haven't figured it out for 20 years, then, you know, I just felt that we're not going to figure it out. But when you look at it, it's actually something that's running inside the subconscious mind, which we use around 95% of the day. So those modalities, and especially hypnosis, gives you the ability to almost look inside and say, where did this start? Let's resolve it. So that's why I was so drawn to that side of hypnotherapy. And RTT obviously was a great tool to use for that.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. And so the concept of regression during hypnotherapy is the idea of going back to the initial trauma itself. Is that correct? And then maybe experiencing that, but in a positive way, whilst being supported. Could you explain more about that process, please?
Yeah, certainly. So if we use the analogy of the little girl who got dropped off at play school, shall we say? So obviously you've got to be skilled at what you do, and you've got to know that you can look after that client, and you've got to make them feel safe. And there are many things that you can use as a hypnotherapist that will detach them from the feelings and make them feel safe while they're doing it. And what we do is I would take that child back to say, where did this come from? We would go back and she would be back in that school, terrified. So, you know, the mind works off pictures and feelings, and the pictures that she has are being dropped off. The feelings are absolute terror. So if we take her back into that situation, when you're using the subconscious mind, you can actually feel yourself in that situation as if it happened yesterday. So to overcome that, what we would do is I would talk to that person, say, how are you feeling? What's going on for you? And from there, get her to maybe speak to her mom and say, look, am I safe? Am I okay to be here? Are you going to pick me up later? Do you love me? Will you be coming back? All of those things until that client says, yeah, I feel okay now. I feel safe now. So then we would move her forward, and the outcome of that would be, I would then almost rewire in that from now on, when you find yourself in any place where there are any people that you would, you know, feel uncomfortable about, you feel great. You feel confident. You know that you've got this. And obviously the picture and the feelings that she had associated with that problem have now been resolved at a deep level. So the mind sort of has a historical point for an, I'm okay. So resolving it at that point really does change the way we move forward, which is why, you know, I'm absolutely obsessed with hypnotherapy. I love it. I love the mind and how it works. But, you know, I see changes in clients every day. You know, clients can come in and have anxiety or OCD for such a long time. And, you know, within a few hours, maybe some clients need 3 or 4 sessions, but within a few hours, your feelings, your internal feelings and your internal auto reactions are then different, because your historical point of information feels different and looks different to the mind. So, you know, the real problem with anxiety and how we react is really just the response that we're holding in the mind. So when you change that response and you change that feeling, we can then become free from anxiety. and free from the problem that we had originally.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's there's obviously correlations there with exposure kind of work, you know, of learning how to go into that fear, that exposure, and habituate to it in a different way, in a supported and safe way. It does make me think, though, how do you ensure that the person who's experiencing this doesn't become re-traumatized by kind of going back to it? Because I imagine that would be a concern, no?
And obviously, as a hypnotherapist, you are trained to be able to deal with those sorts of things. But within my therapy, I make sure that starts before we even start the session. You know, I'd be talking to you saying, look, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to take great care of you. I'm skilled enough to know that if we get, it's called an abreaction, if we get a reaction where you're feeling frightened, you can actually get the mind to sort of detach and float away from those feelings. So you're not actually reliving the trauma. What you're doing is you're reviewing it from a distance. And that's different. Mm. So although you can feel it, it isn't attached to you. So you have the ability, you know, if someone's starting to feel a little bit upset, we can move them away from that and just keep them. Because in that deep, relaxed state, so hypnotherapy is about being very, very relaxed. And I mean, I've been doing this probably 10 years now. I haven't really had many, I can probably count about two where there has been an abreaction, but we've resolved it then and there. You know, it's part of being a hypnotherapist. My job is to look after you. And I think having had anxiety myself, I can spot so many things. We all have these little things that we do and how we feel, you know, and I'm more about making sure that my clients never feel how I used to feel. And that's why I do the job. And I remember one particular client, I work via Zoom now, but I had one particular client who came to my house and he was such a lovely lad. You know, he's only 19. And I always think it's more difficult for men to actually admit because, you know, they're told that you've got to grow up strong and man up and, you know, they don't really have the support network that women do. But to simply get him to sit into the chair, he was pacing my lounge for 2 hours. And I've given him that space, you know, give him that space. Because, you know, I remember going to a therapist once myself and I'd paced outside the door. You know, you're on the what if spiral. What if, what if, what if, what if? I'd paced outside the door for about 15 minutes. I was late for the appointment, but I felt so brave at going in. And I went in and her first thing to me was, you're late, so we're going to have to be quick. So, you know, most people with anxiety are people pleasers. So she'd already started me off with the fear that, oh no, I've upset someone. What if? And at that point, my mind just shut down and I went into my panic spiral. So
it is,
you know, I think really just understanding your clients and having it myself, you know, 40 years, because living with it, you have to be sort of two people, don't you? You're the person outside and you're the person that's locked away inside that not many other people see. And it's knowing that person that's inside.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got you and I know.
Yeah. And when it comes to the actual hypnosis, I mean, so I think some people are, you know, believe that they're, maybe they can't be hypnotized, for example, or that it would be very difficult for them to come under hypnosis to be able to do the regression. Do people have to kind of suspend judgment or something in that case and, you know, try to go along with it and be positive? Like, how do you deal with that kind of situation?
And I can hear the language that you're using, try, and the brain will say, we're not going to try, we won't do that. I think a lot of it, my personal opinion is every single person goes into hypnosis every day. That state where you are just waking up early in the morning and you think, I'm not awake, but I'm not fully asleep, you're actually transitioning through hypnosis. So hypnosis is just a lower brain activity. So you do it every day anyway. And if you're a good hypnosis, my answer is resistance is futile, Rob. You are going to go into it. There is nothing to worry about. And that's my job to make it happen. So, you know, there may be hypnotherapists out there that tell you can't be, but it's very, very rare. But I'm very confident that, yeah, you know, you're paying me to do that. That's what's going to happen.
Hmm. Okay, good. So one of the areas that you've worked with is helping people who struggle with emotional eating disorders. How can hypnotherapy help with that?
Again, see, I'm a full bag of tricks. I had anxiety, OCD, and an eating disorder. So this again all comes from trauma. Every single person that I see who binge eats is a people pleaser, I'll tell you now. And they probably don't have much of a voice. So I tend to look at what is going on at the underneath of the food. It is nothing to do with what you're eating. It is all to do with what is eating you. We will turn to high sugary foods because when we take in sugar, it releases a feel-good feeling in the brain. So, you know, you're never going to come to me and say, oh, Jen, I've just binged on a bag of Brussels sprouts. It's not going to happen. It's always going to be sweet treats, things like that, because that releases a better feeling in the brain. So the brain wants to move away from pain to pleasure, and the brain will always chase pleasure, and sugar is a pleasure. So when you look at somebody who has an issue with eating, I always look at them, and I always usually 9 times out of 10, they've got underlying anxiety. Mm. And as with OCD, eating is a way of managing what's going on. So eating is almost a way of pushing down the feelings that you've got that you cannot manage. So, you know, OCD is about going, well, if I do this 3 times, my mum's going to be safe. It's about keeping someone safe. So the brain has found a solution to run a program. So it's about changing that program. So with food, it's the same, you know, and when we've done food for such a long time as I did, you know, I would binge, purge, starve, to do everything that we could, pile weight on, lose it. When you've done it for such a long time, obviously you get things like the habit of it, but you also get addicted to sugar and dopamine, where you really get addicted to the dopamine release. So then you find yourself not only anxious, but now I've got an eating disorder where I consistently binge. Mm. So to work with someone with eating disorders, you know, I mean, anorexia is slightly different. Anorexia is all really about not feeling good enough. But they're all very, very closely tied together because, you know, when you look at someone with anxiety, they don't feel good enough. They don't have a voice. They're very much people pleasers, trying to make everything right. And there's nowhere for that to go. So we push the food down. So I would look at basically, you know, what's going on beneath it. What is the pain? I've never found an addict that doesn't have pain underneath it somewhere. So what is the pain? Where did you learn that food would solve a problem? Now, if you think about it, most of us as kids will go through something bad and someone will go, here's some sweets. Or they associate it, you know, home life weren't good, but at grandma's it was great and she always made cakes. And all the brain is doing is trying to replay that better feeling than what it is feeling from the fear, the anxiety, the upset. So the brain just is there to protect you and says, I'll move from A to B, I'll move from pain to pleasure, or I'll move from fear to safety. So it's all about finding solutions. So how I work with that is heal what it is that first traumatized them so that they can then start to relax about that and then change the fact that there's addiction and release the anxiety that goes with that and then set the mind up to say, you know, from now on, you've got a lean, fit, healthy body because dieting doesn't work. I do not put them on a diet. I just put them on normal food and let them eat normally. You know, there's so many diets out there. If you buy this, you'll get slim. If you buy that, you'll get slim. They don't work. If they work, there'd only be one and we'd all be doing that. So what works is just to eat what you were born to eat, you know, lean meats, nuts, green seeds, berries, and just get the mind to really feel convinced that wow, that is such a better move for me. I am more likely to survive if I'm eating like that than I am now, and make them feel really good about themselves. So I work with a lot of clients. There is one funny story. I always get my clients off of dairy because dairy is very addictive, very full of sugar. And I walked into Starbucks and there was a woman there. She was probably about a size 8 and she smiled at me and said, hello. And she held this cup up and went, look, it's soy milk. And I thought, that's got to be one of my clients, but who is it? I just didn't recognize her. And I'd seen her the year before and she'd lost about 5 stone. So,
wow,
you know, really changing the mindset. And that's obviously how I worked on myself. You know, I was a complete sugar addict, which also adds to that anxiousness, doesn't it? Because then we beat ourselves up about how we look. So then we eat more. So, you know, it's all connected into one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, eating is just it's a compulsive activity. No, when it comes to anxiety and food, it's just another way that we can control artificially anyway, for, you know, for a short time, those uncomfortable emotions and just kind of push them down a little bit, have a sense that we're okay. But sugar is particularly innocuous because it actually obviously spikes the blood sugar for a short time, and then we get a crash. Anxiety tends to get worse afterwards. And so, yeah, I mean, trying to kind of focus on healthier whole food eating and it certainly helps. No, so yeah, some really good tips there, I think. Okay, and then so in terms of kind of managing anxiety and using hypnosis, whether that's self hypnosis or you know, actually doing a session with you, you mentioned obviously going back, regressing, looking at kind of core fears and addressing those. What are some kind of you know, good tips that you can give people from your experiences as a hypnotherapist, you know, to manage their anxiety and OCD kind of during their day, for example?
I think, you know, things like meditation are going to bring you down and just calm. You just need to be out of your subconscious for a moment. You know, you just hit the nail on the head a moment ago when you said you're managing it for a moment. And that's it. You're managing it for a moment. You've got to remember when you've got anxiety, something's triggered you. And I always, when I've worked with clients, you know exactly what your triggers were, et cetera, et cetera. And just try and stop and think, what am I really feeling here? What is really going on? And if you sort of have that external dialogue, you know, I'm feeling frightened. Why are you feeling frightened? I'm feeling frightened because I might have upset someone. Well, is that realistic? Have you really upset someone? But if you look at things like, you know, you can get downloads, you can get lots of meditation online, taking space out to look after yourself and doing something like that will really just give you a moment to step out of it. It's a bit like mindfulness because you're in that cycle of panic and everyone around you is telling you, you know, you need to breathe. And that used to really annoy me because at that time, I don't want to breathe. I want to just scream or run or you know, just feel I'm going to strangle someone in a minute. But if you can just kind of stop yourself, take yourself out, and there are a lot of downloads and things that you can get. My personal opinion with them is, you know, if you've got anxiety, they're going to help you take the edge off with a download. So they are a great tool. But I don't want you to be disheartened or put off by the fact that I've tried hypnotherapy, I was listening to downloads, because downloads are relying on you to do a lot of the work. And you've got anxiety, you don't really believe in yourself anyway, you know. So it's quite difficult to do the work on yourself. And it's difficult, you know, you can't regress yourself back there. If you do, you know, you've got no one to help you while you're in it. So there are some great things, you know, coaches like yourself, where you can actually talk about what's going on and normalize it, understand the way the mind works, and use different techniques that you can use in those spaces where you think, uh-oh, here I go. You know, you feel that drop of adrenaline and you think, basically, my body is telling me and my mind believes there is something about to kill me. And just to stop yourself and look around and think, one of the things that I always used to ask myself is, what evidence have you got for that, Jen? And what happens then is your panic, you know, you're using your imagination to catastrophize everything. Mm. So to get it out of that mind, to just say, so what evidence have you got for that, Rob? You have to stop and go, I haven't got any evidence. I haven't got any evidence that they're upset with me. You know, what could be the alternative? Maybe she's arguing with a partner and just hasn't answered that text yet, you know, as we're sitting there waiting in panic. So, you know, look around and see where you really are, because all you're doing is working on historical data, trying to take the data from the past to apply it to the future. But it's not the same situation. There are things around you that look familiar. So it's about being aware of where you are, asking and questioning your mind, you know, what evidence have you got for that, Jen? Is this even going to matter this time tomorrow? No. Yeah. Or, you know, what would you tell either your daughter, your son, or your best friend if they were running around going, but you don't understand, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? You would turn to them and you would say, listen, calm down, it's not even going to happen. You'd know the answer, but in that state, you don't give it to yourself. So really listening to your internal dialogue, even write it down. And an interesting thing that I do with some of my clients is write down all those bad things that trigger you that you think about.
Mm.
And then look at whose name you can put by them, because you didn't even come up with them. They came from someone else. You never lay in the cot saying, you know what, I'm going to be stressed as heck today when I get to play school and my friend doesn't speak to me. You know, you didn't care as a child. You had amazing self-esteem. You were very, very confident. So it's just about being aware and, you know, seeking out help, you know. And I think the one thing for me was I kept getting told, you need to manage it. And what drove me was I can't manage this. So keep going. Do not give up on yourself, because there is an answer. There's an answer for everyone and there's an answer for you. And whether that's me with hypnotherapy, whether that's you on a one-to-one with coaching, you know, there is an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because so often that answer involves, you know, not kind of looking for the answer in that moment necessarily.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
Because in that moment you're triggered, as you were just talking about. It's, you know, the anxiety is high, something's happened, you're triggered, and the thinking that you're doing in that moment is catastrophic.
Yes.
You know, and it's likely to take you to all sorts of bizarre and awful places that you really don't want to go to. And if you can just wait a little bit and just postpone kind of doing anything with that, so often the nervous system, we're giving the nervous system an opportunity to just kind of calm down a little bit.
Hmm.
And when we come back to it, it doesn't seem quite so pressing anymore. And maybe we can see things a bit more objectively.
I know. And I think as well, it's a really great point. I think that, you know, because we're made to believe that this is an illness and a panic will attack you, we think this is not within our control. And you know yourself, it waxes and wanes. So if you took someone with depression, I work with depression, I say to a client, if I said to you, you've won £1 million and you're going to Bali tomorrow for 2 weeks, that depression would be gone. That's it, it's gone. It's absolutely gone. You've moved out of the realm where you're triggered. If you come home and you have, say, for example, grown up with a narcissist and someone starts triggering you, it's back. So we tend to think that, you know, when we're in those good spaces, it's gone. I'm not going to touch it, leave it over there in case it starts again. And with you saying, you know, it's so important in those spaces to go, right, when it comes back, I'm ready for this bad boy. I'm not leaving it any longer.
Yeah.
And to get into that place when you are in a good place. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely, totally understand. You know, we need to look at that when we're not in that catastrophizing situation.
Yeah,
because that catastrophizing situation really isn't a mental illness. It's just your fight or flight kicking in.
Yeah.
And it always bothers me when we say, you know, the doctor's put me on these tablets because I'm having panic attacks. Well, he's put you on the tablets because you've got anxiety. You've got anxiety because you're a chronic people pleaser. I'm not sure how the tablet is going to stop you people pleasing. but he'll just up the dose. This is my experience of it. But if you looked, the brain is looking historically for what the problem was. So if you looked at a cat, and a cat is chased by a dog when it's a kitten, bitten, so it's always going to have in the back of the mind, if I see a dog, I'm out of here. It's its instinct. It's the same as us. You know, if I see someone I've got to please, my instinct, I'm out of here. So when that cat sees that dog and they're triggered, it gets ready to run and it goes. That's exactly the same in a human, but we don't run. But what we say is we're going, oh, you're having a panic attack. But you wouldn't look at the cat and say, oh, look, the cat's having a panic attack. Mm. It's normal for them, but
yeah,
but kind of unnormalized it by telling us it's an illness, you know. And it was the scariest part for me, I think, was always being told. And when I went into that clinic for 6 weeks, you know, that the psychiatrist, this is a psychiatrist, he knows his stuff, doesn't he? And he said to me, well, this is a mental illness, you'll have to manage it. And for someone who does overthink, oh, imagine where I could take that. So, you know, I'd got in my brain, I'm going to be cycling naked up and down the street, not knowing what my name is at some point. So, you know, I think the way we look at it needs normalizing, that this is just reaction-based behaviors.
Wrong. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? It's the kind of self-fulfilling prophecy of these kinds of things. And even, for example, you know, the acronym OCD itself, I think it's very helpful when people kind of understand that they struggle with OCD, because, you know, it's an explanation for what you've been struggling with. It makes you feel less alone. It makes you feel that, you know, you're not so strange after all, that lots of other people struggle with similar things. So that side of it is actually helpful. But I think when we hold on to that kind of acronym too tightly, you know, I'm this person, I'm an OCD person.
Yes. Yeah.
Then it can be a limiting belief, I think.
Absolutely. And,
you know, I think it's more helpful to think of ourselves as, okay, sometimes when I'm, you know, activated and stressed, I obsess a lot, and then I perform compulsions because I have so much anxiety, or I'm experiencing other difficult emotions that I don't like and I'm trying to get rid of them, you know. And you know, but we can change that. And if we just think, well, I'm always going to be an OCD person, you know, that might be a trap, unfortunately.
Your brain is like a Google search engine. We always think, you know, my brain's up there doing its own thing. It's not. Your brain is like a Google search engine. So what your brain does is you get up in the morning, you go, it's going to be a terrible day. It goes, okay, Rob, you told me it's going to be a terrible day. Therefore, I need to confirm. It does something called confirmation bias. I need to confirm all the terrible things and delete all the good things. And at the end of the day, you go, there you go. You see, told you it was going to be a bad day. And that is where you are coming from when you say, you know, I've got OCD. You're almost going to the brain and instructing it, saying, so make sure you keep doing it for me, won't you? Whereas if you took I was five. It was my first day at school. And I remember going into the toilets. The teacher took me to the toilet. And I remember thinking, I was so frightened that my mum would die that day because I'm not there. So I remember thinking, if I turn the handle on this toilet door three times, she'll be safe. Now, someone would have explained to me back then that, oh, so you've found a way of dealing with your feelings that you think's helpful, but let's talk about your feelings. Let's make it feel safe. I probably wouldn't have done it. And, you know, I got to the point where, oh, the carpet hair's going the wrong way. And, you know, I'm up at 3 a.m. in the morning doing things like that. And when I got to know the mind a bit more, one of the things that I did, and this was probably before, this was when I was a bank manager. So I decided that, look, all of these rituals I'm doing, and this may help someone out there, it may not, but it's always worth speaking about. I decided, right, I've got these 20 rituals, but if I count to 1 to 10 in my mind, super quick, under 10 seconds, it means it cancels out and works for all the other rituals. So I moved all of those rituals into this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Ah, they're done. I don't have to do it. So, and that really was enough for me at that point to go, okay. And then I started to obviously tell myself that counting's boring and I can't be bothered to do that. So, you know, the more that you instruct the brain in what you want, not what you don't want, the more the brain will adopt that as a new process. So it really, really is being aware of what you're telling yourself every day and the impact that can have. And if you can't imagine it, you know, one tip I always give to my clients, get a picture of yourself as a child and look at her or him and start with that. All that nonsense that you tell yourself that sends you into a spiral, you start to sort of disconnect it a bit. And you can then see how cruel and awful you are being to yourself and just looking at where that comes from.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's great. Okay. So if people are interested in kind of starting a journey with hypnotherapy, maybe they're interested in working with you, or maybe they just want to know more about it, they kind of recognize that it could help them, what can they start to do?
Well, certainly they can contact me. I'd love to help them. I'm always happy to chat. So you can contact me through Facebook or through my website, www.jennybell.co.uk. But, you know, if you're just starting on that, is it for me? You know, have a look into starting maybe with a bit of meditation, getting yourself into a space where you think, actually, I can relax. Because when you've got anxiety, even the thought of lying down relaxing is too much, you know. So doing something like a meditation, just one that's pre-recorded, you know, there's plenty on YouTube. And just practice the breathing and the lying down and feeling the benefit after that. Then, you know, really look into what the mind is doing, because, you know, we do take it as we're beyond help when we're in that space. And it's really one of the saddest things that we believe. But yeah, certainly look into it. Because when I first started thinking about hypnotherapy, I thought, oof. It's a bit woo-woo for me. When you look into the science of it, the brain and what the mind does, you know, it really is a fantastic way of learning a dialogue, a different dialogue with your mind. And if nothing else, you get that 30 minutes of relaxation per day that you've not been giving yourself at all. Because, you know, anxiety, we just tend to run and run and run and run. We don't tend to stop and just have a break. We're never very kind to ourselves. And, you know, we all talk about self-love. And to me, it was always a bit, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
But to me, self-love is going, actually, I'm going to stop and do something that I like. I'm going to just take some time out. I'm going to spend the day and binge watch this. So all those things that the ex-anxiety person would have said, oh, you can't do that, you better keep going. So, you know, just looking into it. There's so much information out there that you can get on it. And, you know, if you feel, find someone that you feel comfortable with. You know, many, many people do hypnotherapy, but you're giving this person, and this is how I feel, you're giving this person and talking to someone about things you've never spoken to in your life. You know, check their credentials, check their history, check their Google reviews, because you're going to get a much better picture from who they've seen. And have a chat with them first. And if you feel like, this is my person, I think they're going to take care of me, that I think outweighs some of the modalities that they use. It really is. It's time to look after yourself. So make sure the person that you meet is going to give you their hand and pull you out the boat rather than jump in there with you, I guess. Just look after yourself. Really is a time to find.
Yeah, it's great advice. Thank you for that. If you only had one piece of more advice, if you could only give that one piece of advice to people who might be struggling with OCD and anxiety, from all of the experiences that you've had, what would that piece of advice be?
Believe. Absolutely believe. Do not give up on yourself. You know, 1998, I was told I was terminally ill, and I really believe the way the mind works, if that was the case, I probably wouldn't be here. So I always think that we hear so many stories. You know, you're told you're going to take tablets, you're stuck in this place, this is an illness. I'm living proof. I do not have anxiety anymore. I do not have OCD anymore. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you're on your journey and your job, you see millions of people that you change the lives of every day. And it is about, you know, believe that it can change. Know that this is not your way of life for the rest of your life. And do not give up until you find what works with you, because something will. This is a fight or flight reaction. This is not an illness. Obviously, there are people out there who do need medication, and I would never, you know, disagree with that. But, you know, most of us have belief systems that are not serving us. So if you can give up smoking, if you can win a race, you've already got the determination to change this, and you just need to find the modality that suits you and to stick with it. And, you know, one of my absolute favorite quotes, if you like, is Stephen Hawking, and he does a very famous speech at the end about how, you know, we all on this planet, and we all have access to so many things. But he says, you know, you shouldn't put boundaries where there shouldn't be any. And I think that's sometimes we put up that boundary that I've got, like you said earlier, I've got OCD, I'm owning it. I've got anxiety, I'm owning it. No, we're not owning it. Nobody wants to own it. Let's get rid of it. And just believe in yourself.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
If you want to help, then get someone to help who'll believe in you. You know, I'll look after my clients till they get where they need to get. And I'm sure you do. But yeah, self-belief.
Yeah, that's great. Really, really nice way to finish there, I think. Belief is so important. So, Jenny, thank you so much for your time. Just one more time, if people want to get in touch and find out more about you, how can they do that?
I'm on Jenny Bell Hypno on Instagram. Feel free to follow me. You can follow me on Facebook, Jenny Bell, Advanced Hypnotherapy NLP Practitioner, and my website. Hopefully you could put a link underneath this podcast. It's jennybell.co.uk. And obviously I'm always happy to help.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Reminder that if you want to get a free session, all you need to do to get that is to head over to my website, www.robertjamescoaching.com. And there you can leave me a message and we can arrange the free session. And now just a quick reminder of my disclaimer. Any information that you view on my website, Instagram page, Facebook group, or anywhere else online, or any information that you listen to on the podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for actual medical or mental health advice from a doctor, psychologist, or any other medical or mental health professional.